Genesis chapter 38. This chapter covers many years of time, and it's very likely that the episode in this story took place before Joseph was sold into slavery. The chapters aren't necessarily all in chronological order. Sometimes they cover an event and talk about an event. And so it's very likely that the story that we're going to look at this morning started many years before Joseph was sold into slavery and probably progressed on beyond that. And though the details, if you know anything about Genesis chapter 38, it's not exactly a real savory type of a chapter. There's a lot of sorry problems in chapter 38, and I'd ask you to pray for me as I preach, that the Lord would give me just the right words to say, to be able to make the Lord's word clear, but also to be discreet in as we deal with these things. But the God has placed these things in the Bible for our benefit. And that's important for us to always remember that. Anytime there's something in the Bible that we look at and think, well, why would God put that in the Bible? Well, there's a reason for it. And God put it in there to help us, because God recorded for us not only the positive things, but also problems of sin and things of that nature, so that we'd be able to avoid the sinful mistakes and foolish mistakes of people in the past. And once again, one of the verses that come to my mind as I was studying over this passage is Galatians 6, verses 7 and 8, where it says, "Be not deceived, God is not mocked, for whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. For he that soweth to the flesh shall of the flesh reap corruption, and he that soweth to the spirit shall of the spirit reap life everlasting." And the sowing and reaping principle is certainly true as we look at this chapter this morning. And as we look at this, you know, if I want us to realize that, you know, anytime we're dealing with sin, that if we don't pull the weeds of sin out, they will spread. All of us know what happens with weeds. You can't get your flowers to grow, but the weeds grow without any problem at all. All right? They're just all over the place. And that's the way it is with sin. You know, we try to plant good things in our life, and they don't seem to grow very well, but the sinful things, they take off. And that is true in every area of our life. And so we need to be careful and learn from this chapter. So this morning, as we look at this chapter, ask God to place within your soul a fear of God, and also to place in your soul a purpose in your heart to do what is right when you face difficult situations and temptations. So Genesis chapter 38 and verse number 1. "And it came to pass at that time that Judah went down from his brethren and turned in to a certain Adullamite whose name was Hira. And Judah saw there a daughter of a certain Canaanite whose name was Shua. And he took her and went in unto her, and she conceived and bare a son, and he called his name Ur. And she conceived again and bare a son and called his name Onan. And she conceived and bare a son and called his name Shelah. And he was at Kazeba when she bare him." Now, as we start out here, first of all, we need to know who Judah was. All right, remember Jacob had how many sons? All right, he had 12 sons. He had 12 sons. Judah was the fourth born son. All right, there was Reuben, Simeon, Levi, and then Judah. Judah was his fourth born son, so he was Joseph's older brother, and he was probably 5 or 6 years older than Joseph. And so here's Judah is the one we're talking about here. Now, time had passed. Judah's a grown man now. As the story progresses, he finds himself a wife. And as we look at this, Judah married, first of all, we see here he married an unbeliever. And we've talked about that in the past with some of the other mistakes, but that was a big mistake he made here. And he married a woman named Shua, who was a Canaanite. Now, the Canaanites, if you remember when God told Abraham he was going to give him the land of Canaan. And he said that he would give him the land of Canaan, and he would chase out eventually one day, chase out all the Canaanites and the Hittites and the Amorites and the Jebusites and all the other ites that were in the land. And he was going to chase them all out or defeat them and give the land to Israel. Now, the Canaanites were among the people of the land that were ungodly. They were the ungodly people of the land, and Judah finds his wife among them. Now, one of the thoughts that comes to my mind right away is, why didn't Judah follow the practice of his father and his grandfather? Remember, Abraham, what happened when Abraham's son Isaac was old enough to find a son? Well, Genesis chapter 24, he told his servant, you go up to my land where in my country and find one of the God-fearing people and get one of those women up there, and she will become the wife of Isaac. Then when Isaac's sons got ready to get married, he sent Jacob back up to Haran again, to their people again, to find himself a wife among their people that were God-fearing people. Now, they weren't all perfect. They weren't all, you know, wonderful, godly people, but they were God-fearing people in many respects. Now, Judah here, when he gets ready to find a wife, Jacob, where's Jacob? He doesn't get involved. Now, whether Judah just said, Dad, I don't want you to help me, I'll find my own wife. Or, yeah, I don't know what the situation was. We're not given any details. But we do see here one thing, and that is that Judah was on his own finding a wife. And notice there that it says that he saw there that of the daughters of a certain Canaanite. He saw her. Now, I don't want to read too much into that, but at the same time, we see here that he saw her. You know, the thing is, he didn't say that he found himself a wife. It says that he saw her. And I think that the indication there is that he was basing his choice on what he saw. And if we're not careful, you know, we can make some big mistakes in life by choosing a spouse by what we see. You know, the world around us, they capitalize on beauty, not on character. And young people, one of the most important things that you will ever do in your entire life is find a spouse that God wants for you. And if you find a spouse based on their looks or their beauty rather than on their character, you will live to regret it. You will live to regret it. Because beauty will fade. Character, when beauty fades, the character comes to the surface. And a lot of times the character is not good character if they're not based on character. And by character, we're talking about the characteristics of that person. What are they really like deep down inside? What are they really like? What do they think about God? What kind of walk with God do they have? What kind of relationship with God do they have? Well, how do they live? You know, we need to look at those kind of things because it's very, very important when we're finding a spouse. Now, dads, it's important for us to protect our children. We really do. We need to protect our children and help them when it comes to finding a spouse. And we need to start this when they're little. Start it when they're little. And train them all the way through. The dad and mom are going to help you find your spouse. And when that day comes, we're going to help you find a godly spouse. We're going to help you find somebody that will lead you, will be a help to you and encouragement to you. Now, whether it's the boys or the girls, we need to get involved in their life and help them. It's very, very important because moms and dads have wisdom that the children don't have. You know, we could probably all look back, those of us who are a little older, and look back when we were 17 or 18 and think, well, how smart we were, or how smart we thought we were. But then later on we found out we weren't near as smart as we thought we were. Mom and dad have a lot more wisdom than parents do than the children do because the parents have many more years of experience. And so it's very wise for dads and moms to get involved in this and teach our children to save their heart and their body for their spouse. To save their heart and their body for their spouse. You know, many young people that don't necessarily lose their body purity, they do lose their heart. And they give their heart to someone and emotionally, you know, if the relationship breaks off, then they just are shattered. You know, and many times in the secular world, and sadly in a lot of the Christian world, that couples, you know, when they'll date and then they break it off, and then they date somebody else and they break it off, and they date somebody else and break it off, and do this over and over and over again. And even if there's not a immoral result in it, there's still a broken heart every time, and that is not healthy and to deal with. And then also the importance of looking for character there. And young people, don't be fooled. Beauty and charm are not what you need to look for when you're looking for a spouse. You need to marry a spouse that is a godly Christian. A godly Christian. And God will bless you if you do. And if you have a spouse with godly character, you are far, far more likely to have a stable, happy marriage. Far more likely. And so, young people, don't get impatient. Wait for God. And let God lead you in that. Now, as we move on here, we saw here that Shua bare him three sons, Onan, and Shelah. And then it seems like all of a sudden time passed. you know, 20 years or so have passed here. Maybe not quite that long. I don't know how old they were when they are ready for marriage. But time's passed now. And we see down in verse number 6 that Judah took a wife for his firstborn, whose name was Tamar. All right, so Judah finds a wife for Tamar. Now, it's interesting. Judah's dad didn't help him find a wife, but he steps in and helps his son find a wife. But unfortunately, he didn't do much better than he did by himself, because as far as we can tell, Tamar was a Canaanite, and not necessarily a God-fearing woman at all. From anything we can see, there's nothing necessarily indicating that she was God-fearing, at least not at this point. I don't know. But nonetheless, even if she was a God-fearing woman, ends up being a bad guy. And here's a verse that we'll have to ask the Lord about, because I don't understand exactly what the Lord's talking about here. But it says that in verse 7, and Judah's firstborn was wicked in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord slew him. Now that's all he tells us. We don't know any more about it. You know, he marries Tamar, and apparently right early after they get married, they don't even have any children yet, and does something wicked, and God kills him. God took his life. Now, you know, we could all guess and say, well, why? I think maybe this. We don't really know what would have caused it. The only thing I can think of is some of the indications here. First of all, is it had to have been something very serious. God doesn't just take someone's life without a very, very serious reason for it. My personal guess is that it may have been something to do with false religion. You know, his mother was a Canaanite. Perhaps he learned some of the false religious practices from his mother, the Canaanite. Maybe they were involved in some kind of false god worship, and God took his life. I don't know. But whatever it was very serious, and God slew him. God took his life. And that is a reminder for us of how God is holy and God is righteous. Now, last week, we talked about the importance of instilling character and godliness in our children. And again, we're reminded of this because Judah failed to instill character in Ur. His firstborn son is so wicked that God took his life. And that means that he didn't teach him character. Did not grow up in a godly manner where he was God-fearing and walking with the Lord. That wasn't happening in his life. Something was wrong. Something was missing. And Judah had failed to pass on the character that he needed, and as a result, he died prematurely. Now, Judah told Onan then to marry Tamar. Now, this sounds really strange in our culture, in our thinking, and someday we'll have to talk to the Lord about it and find out the reasoning behind it. But as you read this section, it certainly appears that God had told Abraham's family that they were to do this as well. Because later on, we find out that that God was angry when Onan didn't obey. He didn't do this. So maybe God was angry because he didn't obey his father. Maybe God was angry because he didn't fulfill what God had told Abraham's family to do. But what he said is God had apparently revealed to them that if an older brother marries and doesn't have any children and he dies, then the next brother in line was to marry the older brother's wife and have a child by her. And that first child, that first male child, would be named after the older brother to carry on his family. All right, so it would carry on the family of the older brother. And so the younger brother was to marry the older brother's wife after the older brother died. And Onan didn't like that idea. And we see here in verse number 8, and Judah said unto Onan, go unto thy brother's wife and marry her and raise up seed unto thy brother. And Onan knew that the seed should not be his. And it came to pass that when he went in unto his brother's wife, he spilled it on the ground, lest he should give seed to his brother. And the thing which he did displeased the Lord. Wherefore the Lord slew him also. So he did not want to obey God. He did not want to do what his father told him to do. And he did not want to bear child for Tamar and his older brother Onan. Now, when he refused to do that, God took his life. Now, again, it shows me that there was something. They had to have known that God was telling them to do this. It wasn't just his dad Judah's idea. It was something he got from God. God had told him that because God was upset. When God's upset enough to take someone's life, we know that they did something very serious in the sight of God. Because God's not in the habit of just striking people dead unless there's something very serious. You look through the Bible and think of different times when God took someone's life. You don't find very many where just like that, he drops them over dead. There was Uzzah. Remember Uzzah? When he touched the Ark of the Covenant, God struck him dead. In the New Testament, we find the example of Ananias and Sapphira, who lied and said that they had sold their property for this much and they were giving it all to the Lord's work, and they lied about it, and God struck them both dead because they did something very serious in the sight of God. Now, exactly the details of this, all we know is that God was involved in it and God was displeased and God took his life. And then it reminds us, though, of two very important facts here that's good for us to remember. Number one is children are a blessing from the Lord and not a curse. All right? Onan didn't want children, and he refused to do what God asked him to do, and he looked at it as a curse, not a blessing. And God says, no, children are a blessing from the Lord. And that's something for us to remember, that children are a blessing. But we find a second fact is that it's a serious mistake to rebel against the Lord. It's always a serious mistake to rebel against God. And it doesn't matter whether it's dealing with this area of life or whether it's any area of life. If we know what God's word says we're to do and we want to do the opposite, we are walking on very dangerous ground because we are rebelling against God, and it's a serious mistake to rebel against God. Now, Judah asked Tamar then to remain a widow until Shelah, his third son, was grown up, old enough to marry her. All right, so here's the situation again. Remember, Judah's the dad, and he has his marriage for his son Ur, and Ur's wicked, and he dies. So Tamar's left and without a child, and so he says, Onan, you marry her. And Onan said, no, I'm not going to do this. And Onan dies. And then, so two boys have died now, and Tamar's still a widow. And so then Judah says to Tamar, Tamar, listen, you wait. Sheila's still a little bit young to marry you yet, and you wait a few years, and I'll let him marry you, and then he can raise up children for you like his brothers were supposed to do. And so that was the agreement, and she goes back home to her family and lives as a widow. And yet we find that years go by, and Judah didn't do what he said. And we get a little indication of the reason, perhaps, in verse number 11. It says, and then said Judah to Tamar, his daughter-in-law, remain a widow in thy father's house till Shelah, my son, be grown. For he said, here's the key, lest peradventure he die also as his brethren did. And Tamar went and dwelt in her father's house. So what my thinking is here, as you look at that, he's saying, I'm not real anxious for Shelah to marry you right now because two of his brothers have already died marrying you and they didn't do right. And if Shelah marries you right now, he might mess up too and he'll die too, and then I won't have any boys. And so he puts it off, and never does get around to giving Shelah to Tamar for a husband. And as a result, that leads to more problems and more problems. And verse number 12 says, in the process of time, the daughter of Shua, Judah's wife, died. And Judah was comforted and went up to the sheep shears in Timnath, and he and his friend Hira, the Adullamite. All right, now let's stop there and think about this for a minute. All right, so Judah, the dad, his wife dies. So time had gone by. So it's been probably 20 years or so since he married her. They've had three kids. They've grown up. And the first two married and died because of their sins. And the third one is old enough to get married, but hasn't married her yet. All right? And then during this time, his wife dies. Shua dies. And so Judah's left alone. And he goes up to Timnath to the sheep shears. All right? So he's got all these herds of flocks of sheep. And he talks to his friend Hira and says, hey, Hira, come on up with me. Let's go up to see how the sheep shears are doing. They're shearing the sheep. Let's go check on, see how they're doing. So they travel up to see where they're at. Now, Hira is his friend, and we're going to find out that Hira was not a very good friend. Now, folks, one of the things we can learn from this is about friendship. It's important we have good friends. And as we look at this, we're going to find out that Hira was not the kind of friend that he needed. He needed, right now, he needed a friend that would stand strong and do what is right. And we see here in verse 13, and it was told Tamar, all right, so this is the daughter-in-law that's lost two husbands already. It was told Tamar, saying, "Behold, thy father-in-law goeth up to Timnath to shear the sheep." And she put her widow's garments off her and covered her with a veil and wrapped herself and sat in an open place, which is by the way to Timnath. And for she saw that Shelah was grown and she was not given unto him to wife. All right, now here's the situation. Tamar, she gets frustrated waiting for her father-in-law to give her the third boy to marry. She's frustrated and she takes matters into her own hands and does something that was very wrong. She was wrong. She decided that she was going to play the harlot and be a harlot and stand by the roadside and tempt Judah, her father-in-law. Now, that wasn't a good thing to do at all. I told you, this chapter is full of all kinds of wickedness that we see in our culture around us today. But we can learn from these things. God has placed them here for us to learn for our benefit. And verse number 14 says, "And she put on, put her widow's garment off and covered herself with a veil and wrapped herself and sat in an open place by the way to Timnath." And then verse number 15 says, "And Judah saw her and thought her to be a harlot because she had covered her face. And he turned in unto her to by the way and said, 'Go to, I pray thee, let me come in unto thee.' For he knew not that she was his daughter-in-law. And she said, 'What wilt thou give me that thou mayest come in unto me?' And he said, I will send thee a kid of the flock.' And she said, 'Wilt thou give me a pledge till thou send it?' And he said, 'What pledge shall I give thee?' And she said, 'Thy signet, thy bracelets, and thy staff that is in thy hand.' And he gave it her, and he came in unto her, and she conceived by him. And she arose and went away and laid by her veil from her, and put on garments off the garments of her widowhood. And Judah sent the kid by the hand of his friend the Adullamite to receive his pledge from the woman's hand, and he found her not. Then he asked the men of the place, saying, 'Where is the harlot that was openly by the wayside?' And they said, 'There's no harlot in this place.' And he returned to Judah and said, 'I cannot find her.' And also the men of the place said that there is no harlot in this place. And Judah said, 'Let her take it to her, lest we be shamed. Behold, I sent this kid, and thou hast not found her.'" All right, now, as we look at the situation, a very bad situation, Tamar dresses herself up like a harlot and sits by the roadside to tempt her father-in-law when he comes by. She covers her face all up so he doesn't know who it is. And he's lost his wife. He's lonely. He's in a situation where he's tempted and he sees this harlot. And the Adullamite, his friend, Hira, should have said, "That's not a good idea. That's not a good idea." But he doesn't say anything. He just kind of goes along with it. He wasn't the kind of a friend that Judah needed at this time. Judah let down his guard when he needed a friend that would help him to stand strong and do what's right. Now, one thing we need to remember is you cannot trust unsaved friends to help you live godly. All right, let me say that again. You cannot trust ungodly friends or unsaved friends to help you live godly. You need friends that will be godly friends. You need friends that will be pleasing to God, that will draw you close to God. You need friends that will build your friendship with godly wisdom. You know, we read in the book of Proverbs, chapter 13, verse 20. It says, "He that walketh with wise men shall be wise, but a companion of fools shall be destroyed." Now think about that. He said, "He that walketh with wise men shall be wise, but a companion of fools shall be destroyed." Now, who is a fool and a wise person in the Bible? Wednesday nights, we've studied into this, and Sunday nights now, we've been studying about the wise man. The difference between a wise man and a fool is a wise man gets his counsel from God. A fool gets his counsel from his own heart. A wise man seeks God's wisdom to lead him in his life. A fool does what he wants to do. A fool is one who's rejected God. You know, we all know people that have refused to receive Jesus Christ their Savior. Now, they may be nice people, but they're still lost and they're still fools compared to one who is spiritual and one who walks with God and is wise. And we need to be very careful not to make our good friends unsaved people that will lead us the wrong way. And Hira here was one of those men that didn't help Judah. We find also in Proverbs 14:7 it says, go from the presence of a foolish man when thou perceiveth not in him the lips of knowledge. So he says, God says, go from the foolish man. Go away from him. Don't spend time close to him. Don't make him your good friend, because he's going to lead you the wrong way. He's going to lead you into trouble and into problems. Also in 1 Corinthians 15, verse 33 says, be not deceived, evil communications corrupt good manners. Communications deals with our conduct. And he says evil communications, evil conduct, evil friendships, evil relationships will corrupt good manners. And you hang around people that are not godly and don't love the Lord, and they will lead you the wrong direction. They will lead you. You can say, oh, pastor, that won't happen to me. You know, I got really good friends. And if they're ungodly, if they don't know Christ their Savior, they will lead you the wrong way. They will. And it's not wise. Now, I'm not saying we should not be friendly toward unsaved people. I'm saying they should not be our close friends. If you have close friends that do not know the Lord as their Savior, you are asking for big trouble. You're asking for big trouble. Yes, we do need to witness to them. Yes, we need to be a testimony to them. But the best way to be a testimony to them is to stand up and take a stand and do what's right. And it'll help you if you'll do that. All right, now let's move on here. Tamar, she plans this evil plot, and she lures Judah into adultery. And we see that a very key thing that she did in verse number 14, she put off her widow's garments and she covered herself with a veil and wrapped herself and sat in an open place. She put on the clothing of a harlot. And you know, it's important for us to realize that dress does make a difference. You know, there's a lot of people in our world, even a lot of Christians, that don't seem to understand what we wear has a great deal with what people think of us. And ladies especially, the way you dress has a powerful effect on men. And ladies don't understand that a lot of times. Unless their husband has told them or their father has taught them, they don't understand because it doesn't make sense to them. But men don't think like women. And what you wear makes a big impact, and it has a great effect on men, and we need to be very careful. Tight clothing of any sort reveals your body, and if you wear clothing that reveals your upper legs or your low neckline or your bare shoulders, it's tempting men to look at you in a sinful way. And you might say, oh, that's silly, pastor. Oh, I'm just telling you the truth. I'm telling you the truth. And if you don't believe me, you ask a man who will be honest. And he'll tell you the same thing. And it includes swimsuits. You know, people say, oh, now you're really going crazy. Well, let's just stop and think about it. If the swimsuit is modest, then we wear it to church. But if you wouldn't wear it to church, it's because you know it isn't modest. It isn't modest. And it's drawing attention to the wrong things. It's drawing attention to the body, and it'll lead men to think things that are wrong. And no godly woman wants to be tempting men to think evil thoughts. No godly woman wants that. And so we need to be very careful about the things we wear. And men, I think we need to be careful about what we wear as well, though women aren't as tempted by their looks as men are. We still need to be careful about that. So she puts on the clothing of a harlot, and she gets exactly what she was after. She went out there to try to entice him, and she succeeded. And he fell for it, and he fell into sin with her. And then she says, all right, you know, what are you going to give me? And he says, I'll give you a kid of the goats. And she says, well, yeah, but wait, what about until then? And so she gets him to give her his signet and a bracelet and staff. And so he gives her those, and then he goes away. And she conceives and is now pregnant. A few months later, word gets out about this, and trouble comes. Now, before we move into that, let me just share this with you. I was listening to a sermon last week, and the preacher was preaching. He was talking about something totally different. But he was talking about temptations. And he said that there's three times that are very dangerous for us men. Especially men. Ladies too, but especially men. That we need to be very careful. Three most common times temptation attacks. Number one is when we're tired. Number two, when we are traveling. And number three, when we're troubled. If you're tired or traveling or troubled, those are the three times that you are most vulnerable to sin. Most likely to sin when you're tired, traveling, or troubled. And you stop and think over your life. I thought about that and I thought, yeah, he's absolutely right. The times that I have yielded to temptation usually was when I was tired or when I was troubled or when I was traveling. Because you're out of your normal situation. You're by yourself many times. Very dangerous times. And in those times, what do we need to do? Those times, we need to double our guard. We need to double our guard and start meditating regularly on James's victory steps. If you haven't already memorized James chapter 4, verses 7 through 10, you need to memorize those four verses. Submit yourselves, therefore, to God. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Draw nigh to God, and he'll draw nigh to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners. Purify your hearts, you double-minded. Be afflicted and mourn and weep. Let your laughter be turned to mourning and your joy to heaviness. Humble yourselves in the sight of the Lord, and he shall lift you up. Now, those four verses are verses that can help you every day to gain victory in your life. The first one says, submit yourself to God. So if you come and say, God, I need your help, you're submitting to God. Resist the devil. Don't do what he wants you to do. Say no. Walk away from sin. Then he says, draw near to God. That means spend quality time with God. You need to get in the book and spend time with God. Draw nigh to God, and he will draw near to you. So if you draw close to God, God will draw close to you. Then he says, to cleanse our hands and purify our hearts. Our hands refers to our actions. Our heart refers to the thoughts and the intents of the heart. So he says, we need to get right with God. Confess to God, God, the things that I have done are wrong, or the things that I have thought are wrong. And we get right with God. And then he says, be afflicted and mourn and weep. Let your laughter be turned to mourning and your joy to heaviness. That he's talking about having a broken heart before God. To come to God and say, God, I am weeping over my sin. What I've done has been wrong. My thoughts are wrong. My actions are wrong. I have been wrong. And we weep and mourn over our sin. We get right with God and we cry over our sin. You know what? Many times we are not really all that broken over our sin. It's like, oh yeah, I made a little bit of a mistake, you know, give me a break. Oh, sure, I did, you know, everybody does it, you know, and we make all kinds of excuses. We try to justify our sin. We call it candy type names instead of just saying, God, what I did was rotten and it was wrong. And I have sinned against you. You know, the reason that we don't want to call sin, sin like we do, should, is because we have a wrong opinion of God. We don't see God as the holy, righteous God of heaven. The God of heaven that struck Uzzah dead because he touched the Ark of the Covenant. And Uzzah was trying to hold it from falling on the ground. And many times people say, oh, come on, give him a break. Uzzah was just trying to keep that Ark from falling on the ground. Yes, but they were doing it the wrong way. And God said, don't touch it. And he touched it and it struck him dead. You know, God is a holy God. And when God looks down at our sin, it doesn't matter whether that sin is lying or immorality. It's a sin that grieves God and God hates it. And God says we need to get right with God. We need to have a right heart with God. And we need to start calling sin, sin. So we've got to be careful. Meditate on those verses. James 4, 7, 8, 9, and 10. Memorize those verses. They will help you. They will strengthen you. And I have called them the victory steps. The victory steps. And those victory steps will help you to live a victorious life with God. So we need to have a close walk with God. Now, Judah doesn't know what has taken place yet, but he's soon to find out. We see down in verse number 24, and it came to pass about 3 months after that, it was told Judah, saying, Tamar, thy daughter-in-law, hath played the harlot, and behold, she's with child of whoredom. And Judah said, bring her forth and let her be burnt. Alright, so here, he hears that she's played the harlot and she's pregnant and she hasn't waited for his third son like she was supposed to, and he says, alright, kill her. That's the right thing to do. Judge her for her sinfulness. Bring her out and kill her. But then notice what happens. So she stands before him. And she says, and she brought forth, when she was brought forth, she sent to her, she sent to her father-in-law saying, by the man whose these are, am I with child. And she said, discern, I pray thee, whose are these, the signet, the bracelets, and the staff. And Judah acknowledged them and said, she hath been more righteous than I. because I gave her not unto Shelah my son, and he knew her again no more. So here he gets caught red-handed in his sin, and he admits, I am guilty. I am guilty. He drops the charges against Tamar. He doesn't have her killed because he was the one that caused the problem. And the sin had gone from bad to worse. And now Tamar is expecting. And we find as we read on that she has got twins. Verse number 27, and it came to pass in the time of her travail that, behold, twins are in her womb. And it came to pass when she travailed that the one put out his hand, and the midwife took it and bound upon it his hand a scarlet thread, saying, this came out first. And it came to pass as he drew back his hand that, behold, his brother came out. And she said, how hast thou broken forth? This breach be upon thee. Therefore, his name was called Phares. And afterward came out his brother and with that had the scarlet thread on his hand, and his name was called Zerah. Now, there's some good to the end of this bad story. All right? You ever heard those names, Phares and Zerah? Well, they probably don't ring a bell, but if you just recently we've read through the Christmas story, and in the Christmas story, in Matthew chapter 1, in verse number 3, it says, actually in the genealogy of Jesus, Matthew chapter 1, verse number 3, it says, and Judas, speaking of Judah, and Judah begat Phares and Zerah of Tamar. And Phares begat Ezron, and Ezron begat Amram. What did God do? God was willing to forgive a bad situation, a sinful situation, and even allow Phares to be part of the genealogy of the Lord. You know, that tells me something. It tells me that our God is a loving, forgiving God if we will humble ourselves before Him and come to Him. You know, if you have sinned against the Lord and you've done wrong and you come to God and you say, God, would you please forgive me and wash me clean? God is a forgiving God. God is a forgiving God. And He will forgive those who come to Him. Psalm 86 verse 5 says, for Thou, Lord, art good and ready to forgive and plenteous in mercy unto all them that call upon Thee. God is plentiful in mercy. And if we come to Him and say, God, I've made mistakes. I've done wrong. I have sinned. Would You please forgive me? God will forgive us and cleanse us. And when God forgives, He was willing to even allow Tamar to be part of the genealogy of Christ. And you know the amazing thing? When you read through the whole genealogy, it isn't just Tamar. There's others in there. Ruth the Moabite was in there. A Moabite. Someone who was a pagan, but she converted over to Judaism and believing in God. And she's in that. And then there's also Bathsheba. Where do we know Bathsheba? David commits adultery with Bathsheba. And God allows her to be in the genealogy of Christ. Now, all this tells me that God does not justify sin, but God does forgive sinners. God's a forgiving God. And, you know, no matter what our situation in life may be, perhaps your situation has not been a moral situation, but maybe it's been a situation of lying or cheating or doing something you shouldn't do or even saying something you shouldn't say, and you need to get some things right with God. You got a choice. You can either forget it and hide it and not to do anything about it, or you can do what's right and you come to God and say, God, I was wrong. Would You please forgive me? Remember James 4? Be afflicted and mourn and weep. Let your laughter be turned to mourning and your joy to heaviness. If you will come to God and weep and mourn before God and with a broken heart and say, God, I was wrong. Would You please forgive me? He will cleanse your heart and forgive you. You know, as Christians, we need God's cleansing. If you're here today without Jesus Christ, your Savior, you need God's cleansing from your sin to be able to be saved. But if you know the Lord is your Savior, we all still struggle with sin. We all still do things that are wrong. And we can come to God and seek His forgiveness and His cleansing. And so as we look at this morning, and we think back over these sad situations here in this chapter, Sexual sin and immorality is spreading like weeds in our culture. Young people, you've got to be on guard. Older people, we've got to be on guard. It isn't just the young people. It's all of us need to be on guard. Because we live in a sick, sinful world that is, and the devil is working to lure us into evil. We need to stand guard and be wise. That's why I started out the message this morning saying that we need to fear God. And we need a purpose in our hearts to do what's right. Like Daniel of old. Remember Daniel, Daniel chapter 1 verse 8? Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself. And Daniel said, I am not going to do wrong. I am going to do what's right. Next week we're going to see in chapter 39 of how Joseph had a similar resolve in his heart to purpose and say, I'm not going to yield to sin. I'm going to do what's right. And we need to have that, a fear of God and a purpose in our heart to do what is right. And then we need to protect our eyes, guard our thoughts, dress modestly, avoid being alone with the opposite gender, flee intimate conversations. You know, we need to be careful about that. Guys and girls both. Don't get involved in intimate type conversations with someone of the opposite gender that's not your spouse. Because those kind of things only lead one way and they lead to trouble. They lead to trouble all the time. Don't do that. Don't get alone with someone. That's why it's very important. We should, if every one of us would make this a practice, it would help us immensely to say, I will not be alone in a car or a house with a person who is not my spouse by myself. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do that. Because it'll protect us. It'll help us. It'll guard us. It'll keep us. Because the devil is our enemy. And we need to be on red alert when we're tired, when we're traveling, and when we're troubled. You're carrying burdens. The devil's right there ready to tempt you with something worse. You're traveling, and I'm by yourself, all by yourself, nobody around, you're bored, and the devil's right there to give it to you. And when you're tired, just feel like, oh, I don't feel like fighting. I'm tired. And the devil hits us. And you got to be on red alert in those times. And don't let the devil deceive us. Young people, when you think about finding a spouse, don't settle for someone who's got less than godly character. Don't do it. You will regret it if you do. Don't do it. Find someone who is a godly Christian. Not just somebody that says they know Jesus, but somebody that's a godly Christian that's going to be a partner for life that will help you spiritually and be a godly spouse for you. And then if you need forgiveness this morning, God's standing with open arms saying, come. Come unto me, all you that labor and are heavy laden, I'll give you rest. You need to come to Jesus. Let's let God have his way in our life today.